Hello and welcome to Let's Talk Indoor Air Quality. I'm your host, Kyle. We've got a great show lined up for you today. Our guest is going to be Jay Sinha from a website called Life Without Plastic. But before we get to the interview portion of the show, I kind of want to recap last show with you a little bit more, since we got quite a few questions related to the Chinese drywall phenomenon that has gone on in the U.S. The past several years. A lot of our questions that we got related to that kind of came from folks wondering, you know, how can I tell if my home has this particular type of problem? And I'd like to tell folks that a really good resource for them to check out is the United States Consumer Product Safety Commission's website. They have a reasonable amount of information on their website and some resources to kind of get you started on that process. Some of the general thoughts are related to whether or not you have this problem are, there's a couple of ways that you can go about doing that, and that has to do with kind of visual inspections and then evidence that you may see related to that. And some of the visual inspection evidence that you might see is blackening of copper or electrical wires, air conditioning coils, evaporator coils that keep going bad. Did you have drywall installed between 2001 and 2009? And if some of those things are things that you have in your home, some of the suggestions are to have a lab come in and test the drywall to see if there's elemental sulfur present within that drywall. You could do some other things like copper coupon testing, put things where the air's flowing in the home to see if they're corroding. Is there specific markings on your drywall from manufacturers that have been associated with this drywall problem? But overall, it ultimately comes down to proper testing and inspection using licensed contractors. And we know quite a bit of it here where I work at Timelon, the manufacturer of the EnviroCleanse products, because we were involved in this. We've been helping people mitigate these types of corrosive chemicals. And ultimately, that what you want to do is remediate and get rid of these chemicals and pollutants from your air. And we've been able to do that through a couple of things. Number one is kind of the mitigation or the maintenance of the airborne odors and chemicals, the sulfur rotten egg odor associated with this, which is really their corrosive gases. But then the second thing you have to do is you got to get rid of and neutralize the source. And the solutions that we've offered have to do with both of those stages, the maintaining life with air quality, air filtration products, standalone air systems to get rid of the chemicals and odors before it gets remediated, before that drywall gets removed. But then the other thing that we've been involved with is when that drywall gets removed, we have surface treatments that can treat a wide variety of surfaces that may not be removed, such as the cinder block, some of the wood studs, some of the surfaces that don't get removed that may have absorbed these toxic and noxious chemicals so that they don't re-emit or come out once you get that new drywall, and you want to keep them locked away or keep them neutralized without the re-emission problem. So if you ever have any questions about the Chinese drywall situation, we can definitely help you out and point you in the right directions. Now, on to the guest portion of our show today. Our guest is Jay Sinha. He has a website called Life Without Plastics that he is the co-owner and co-founder along with his wife, Chantel. And what they do is they help people make educated purchasing decisions. They provide information. They offer through their website really good quality products that they've researched and sourced to help people reduce plastics in their life. So now I'd like to welcome Jay to the show.
Thank you, Kyle. Thank you very much. It's really a pleasure to be here.
Jay, can you tell us how you and your wife started Life Without Plastic? You guys have been at this quite a while.
Yes. Well, it does go back a ways in time. Around in the early 2000s, around 2002, I guess is where the spark for what led to the business actually began. And it began because my partner in both in life and business, Chantal, and I were living in a home that had mold issues. And at the time, I was also working in a building that was a sick building and had mold and ventilation issues. And as a result of that, both Chantal and I began to develop symptoms from the mold, which things like breathing, sinus issues. And that got us thinking, well, initially we moved from that home, and but that did get us thinking about ways to decrease the environmental toxins and irritants in our environment, because we were becoming more sensitive. We were developing, I would call it a very, very minor case of environmental illness. We were frankly quite sick for about a year after the hardcore mold exposure, but we were able to overcome it largely. But as a result of that exposure, we started looking around for alternatives. We came across an article, Chantal did initially, in Mothering Magazine about plastics, and that for the first time really got us thinking about plastics. And the article talked about chemicals that were used to make them being based, derived from petroleum products, and how these chemicals can come out of the plastics into, for example, food and drink. So that got us thinking. And the initial step was when our son was born, we began looking for, well, the first one was actually a water bottle for ourselves. We were looking for a non-plastic water bottle. And we see them all over the place now, stainless steel and glass, but at the time they were very rare back, in 2002, 2003. And we did come across one bottle, a stainless steel one that was being made, designed by a company down in, it was actually a co-op at the time called Clean Canteen down in California. So we ordered one online, got it, and loved it and didn't think too much about it. Then our son was born, and we were looking for non-plastic baby bottles, which again were very common. Long, well, not that long ago, like in the 60s, 70s, but then sort of disappeared for a while as plastics took over. But we came across a company that was still making glass baby bottles. Chantal was breastfeeding, but we would store milk at times for traveling and that sort of thing. And this company, Evenflo down in Ohio, was still making them. So we contacted them and they said, no problem, you can order some, but the minimum order is 1,000 because they only did wholesale orders. So that got us thinking as well. And that's really with those two products, stainless steel water bottles and glass baby bottles, that's more or less how the company began, primarily by Chantal full time at the beginning. And then a few years or about a year, year and a half into it, I came on full time as well. And from then on, we just began adding more and more products, stainless steel containers being the next big sort of category.
In my house, we've eliminated a lot of the plastic food storage containers, and we have pretty much gone with glass and ceramic products.
And that was our initial focus too, to really focus on any plastic that's touching food or drink. That was really a key focus for us from the start, and to find alternatives that are really hard to find in a non-plastic form, which was really the case back then.
It's been nice having alternatives in the kitchen. What are some of the items that you've had issues finding or sourcing alternatives for?
Yeah. Well, now it's getting much easier, but well, certain, for example, ice cube tray is one that's been difficult. We developed our own stainless steel ice cube tray based on a model that my mother had from the 50s that was made out of aluminum. We using that as a model, we had one made out of stainless steel. Another is popsicle mold, same sort of idea, back in the 50s, but or well, more like the 60s, 70s, there were lots made out of plastic, and still now there are lots made out of plastic, but we've done it out of stainless steel now. Other ones that are hard now, well, brushes were a big one. Brushes for example, doing dishes, for also body-related brushes. But we've come across brushes that are made out of natural materials and wood. And so that's made a big difference as well for people.
I think a lot of people have seen this and noticed a big increase in people using the aluminum and stainless steel water bottles and cups.
Okay, those are much more common now. That's why I didn't really mention them, but they've certainly become more and more common. But again, back in 2002, 2003, you never really saw much in the way of non-plastic dishes apart from glass or ceramic. But since then, it's changed, and you can find much more in the way of stainless steel or stronger types of glass as well. But food storage containers was a big one because Tupperware was obviously very popular and still is. So a large part of what we initially focused on were food storage containers made primarily out of stainless steel with silicone seals, so they could still be airtight and watertight, but the food would not be in direct contact with an actual plastic. And those have been very popular.
Any non-food contact or unusual products that you've been asked about or that people seem to be looking for?
One that has come up quite recently is retainers for dental applications, which are generally made out of plastics. And that's a very tough one because right now we have not found a replacement. We don't know of a replacement, and I know it is an issue of discussion in the dental world among more alternatively oriented dentists. Another one would be spray bottles. For example, some people like to use essential oils as cleaning products, and we have still not found you can find a spray bottle which is made out of metal in the base, but the actual mechanism to spray the liquid is always made out of plastic. We have not found one with a non-plastic mechanism, and it's helpful for people who are looking to use natural cleaning products, things like vinegar or with water and essential oils. And that can be a very important one for people with chemical sensitivities as well.
I'm kind of curious about your background. It's quite diverse. You have backgrounds in science, law, environmental research. How are these impacting what you offer in your store and the resources that you make available? I would think that this would be an advantage while also offering kind of a unique perspective.
Yes. Well, they definitely feed into what I do now. I have to admit, I would never have predicted that I would end up doing now what I am doing based on my background, but it all fits together and really flows into it. And I think the core thing is that it really leads me to take a research-based approach and sort of an educated approach to whatever we're looking at, whether it be a product or an issue. So we look quite deeply into the products, all the ingredients, but not just the ingredients, also the country of origin, the people who are making it. We try and build trust relationships with our suppliers, but we definitely want to know all the ingredients in the product. So we read ingredient lists very carefully. In terms of some of the background work that I've done as well, in terms of environmental research and ecotoxicology as well, that plays into the advocacy work that we do as well. Because yes, we are a store, but we're also very much an educational resource, and we do a fair amount of, I would call it, advocacy and activist work in terms of promoting the, well, promoting or building awareness about the plastic pollution issue in all its forms, be that environmental or health-based. So with the legal aspect, I'm able to understand, for example, legislation that's coming up. One example is the issue of plastic microbeads, which is a very hot one right now, and which, for example, the United States has legislation that's coming into effect in 2018 to ban tiny plastic microbeads, which are used in personal care products as an abrasive, but it's a really, really unfortunate and bad design issue in terms of product design, because these tiny little plastic microbeads are designed to just flush down the drain. They're not caught by municipal sewage systems, and so go straight out into waterways. It's become a huge issue of pollution. And so with the legal background, I'm able to understand what's needed in terms of how to prevent these things from happening. So it allows me to come at it from various different angles, but at the core, it's really it. And I think because I am somewhat a detail-oriented person too, it allows me to dig deeper into issues, and when I do the reading, I can understand quite clearly where the issues are and what goes into a product and what might be a really an ideal solution too. So.
One thing on the show that we always like to do is ask our guests about advice that they would give to some of our listeners who are looking to make improvements in their lifestyle, or perhaps maybe the most important thing that you would suggest to someone looking to make a positive change in the way that they are living.
Sure. There's two ways I would look at it. First, I would suggest you do, this may sound daunting, but it doesn't have to be, and it's really not. Do a really quick, I'll call it a personal plastic audit of your living space. And all it is just taking a look around your home, your living environment, and notice what is plastic in the environment around you. Like the core issue here is that we think it's important to try and reduce the amount of plastic that you're exposed to, the source plastic. So just look around and see what is surrounding you in terms of your clothing, your dishes, your toothbrush, your bags, bottles, all sorts of things, and make a little list. You could do, if you're really ambitious, you could do a little spreadsheet and make it super organized, but even just write down on a piece of paper what you see. And then as a second step, I would suggest focusing on items which are in sort of two categories. One, do they touch directly food or drink? And two, do they have a tendency to break down easily? So in terms of the food and drink ones, that could be dishes, it could be bottles, it could be, like as I mentioned, your toothbrush. And then begin to look for alternatives. And you don't have to look too far for alternatives. For example, in terms of food storage containers, the glass mason jar is an amazing thing. It's inexpensive, it's easily available, and can be used to replace all kinds of plastic containers. It can also be used as a water bottle or a coffee mug. One category. The other is, as I mentioned, things that can break down, that are made out of plastic, and can break down relatively easily. And a big one here, which is coming up more and more in terms of the research and in public awareness, is fleeces, clothing that are made out of plastic. Because what we're finding is that clothing breaks down, that is made out of plastic, it breaks down and creates tiny, tiny, tiny flakes, almost microscopic pieces of plastic, which, for one, are washed down the drain when they're washed in a washing machine. Again, similar to the microbead issue, go straight out into our water systems. But also, the flakes are so tiny, they're creating microplastic dust, which goes into the air. And this I see as a key issue for people who are suffering from, for example, multiple chemical sensitivity or environmental illness or sick syndrome. This is just going to add to the toxic load in their environment. It's very much going to be probably invisible at this point. But it's there are tiny pieces of dust in that category as well are, for example, cash register receipts, which are it's the thinner sort of paper you often find with a black ink on it. That ink is it contains bisphenol A, an endocrine disruptor, and it comes off onto your fingers. So avoiding cash register receipts is another way to prevent being exposed in a very direct way, because the bisphenol A goes onto your fingers and it goes straight into your body. So by avoiding those receipts, you can avoid that exposure right there.
Well, Jay, thank you for being on the show. Where can our listeners get into contact with you and learn about reducing plastic in their life?
Well, we have a website called lifewithoutplastic.com, and that is our store and our information resource. We have lots of information there about different types of plastics as well as plastic alternatives, and also about issues related to plastic pollution. So that's certainly one place to find us. And we also have a blog, which you can find through the website. We as well send out an email newsletter every 2 weeks to a month in which we provide, there could be specials related to products or announcements of new products, and also information about plastics, plastic alternatives, and things happening in the, I guess they could call it, anti-plastic world to some extent. I'd emphasize as well, though, that While we are very much against plastic for many sorts of uses, we do realize and understand that plastic does have its uses and is important in certain contexts, such as, for example, for security issues for in the medical industry as well. But that's just to jump back a bit, the medical industry is one area where plastic really does need to have some serious replacements as well, in particular with things like IV tubing and catheters, that those are causing some serious toxicity issues. While we are very much against plastic, it does have its uses at times. So yes, no, to find us is primarily through the website, and would also suggest to people that, to really go about educating yourself, learning about different plastics and the alternatives that are out there, and some of the other resources that we often go to are places like the Environmental Working Group and the Breast Cancer Fund or Environmental Defense. These are all NGOs working on the issue quite directly, or Surfrider Foundation as well. There's also a blogger named Beth Terry, who has a blog called My Plastic Free Life, and she has a world of information on her site in terms of all kinds of suggestions for living without plastic in your day-to-day life. So she's a great resource.
Thank you for those resources. We're going to check them out. And again, I really appreciate you coming on the program and sharing with us some of that insightful information.
Well, thank you very much, Kyle. It's really been a pleasure and an honor to be able to share this information with you and your listeners. Much appreciated.
That was Jay Sinha from Life Without Plastic. Well, I think we had a really good show today, and that's all the time we have. So thank you for listening, and please remember, if you have any questions, you can contact us or submit them through our website, which is EnviroCleanse.com, which is EnviroKlenz.com. And you can always reach us by phone here in the United States at 239-330-9650, Monday through Friday during typical business hours. You can always email us at CustServe, which is CustServ, at EnviroCleanse.com or at Timelon.com, Timilon. So CustServe at Timelon.com. Until next time, I'm Kyle, and this was Let's Talk Indoor Air Quality.